Next step number 720, March 24th, 2022.
Hi there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. Thanks for tuning into the Next Step with Father Vazgen. We are the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast started in 2008 that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're here. And if you're a regular listener, welcome back. In these weekly episodes, you will find that Father Vazgen's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on the solid principles of Christ's love, faith, and hope. Now, let's get ready to take the next step.
It is really depressing. That's how I, I'm not supposed to laugh at that, right? That's how I started when I looked at the newspaper this morning and I just go, this is depressing. And I looked at an Armenian newspaper. That's what I'm talking about. And I thought to myself, why am I depressed about this? What is the depression? So I went, as like we all do, right? I Google searched causes of depression. And there's a whole list of them. And I know it's a very, very serious issue. And to say that I am depressed about something, it has all kinds of connotations because it can go out there on the serious end. But I want to share it with you because it is like a frustration that I have. So there's a whole set of different reasons why people will go through depressions, including genes, gender, age, abuse. But there was one here that said conflict. Depression is someone who has a biological vulnerability to it, may result from personal conflicts or disputes with family members or friends. And so I think this one was the one that just kind of like hit me because I'm thinking about the bigger family, which is, of course, the Armenian people, in my case, the Armenian Christian community, Armenian church community, and it is depressing when you see what's going on out there. Now, wait a minute. I'm going to tell you about something really exciting in a few minutes, okay? I'm going to tell you about how the Reclaim Conference went. And that was specifically about Armenian Christian family. But I cannot help but to start off with this. Because I got my copy of one of the Armenian newspapers today. And I'm looking at the covers. I'm not going to say it. It doesn't help us any to know which paper or whatever. There are ones that I will tell you about because I just can't stand them. But this one, decent paper. But what do I see on there? You know, the first thing it says on there, the 107th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide to be commemorated on Times Square. Woohoo! And then in a small little note there, it says the genocide commemoration at Montebello Monument will take place April 23rd. And I go, woohoo, okay, here we go again. April coming up, and what we're going to do is we're going to commemorate something because as we're looking at the world, folks, you know, this is something that happened 100 years ago, and it's happening right now in Ukraine, and we are silent about it, aren't we, right? And it's so easy to commemorate something that happened in the past. It's so difficult to stop something that's happening right now. And so I searched in this paper to see if there was any mention of Ukraine. And there it was, right on the cover. It says, 11 Armenians killed in Ukraine. Of course, you know, this is what's the news, right, for Armenians. That there's 11 Armenians that were killed. Tragic, tragic. It really is. It's tragic because of the entire situation in Ukraine. And tragically, Armenians cannot afford to lose any more people. And certainly, as being part of that population, we are going to be suffering loss. But it's just interesting to me, and it's depressing to me, that these are headlines for the Armenians. Because in the same tone, we're talking also about what we as Armenians need to be doing today. If you had a chance to see my sermon last Sunday, I don't know what it was. It was in the middle of Lent. It was the third Sunday of Lent, the Sunday of the Steward. I don't know what it was, but I celebrated the Divine Liturgy at the Armenian Cathedral in in Burbank at the request of the primate, the archbishop, and it's always an honor. It's really, really is an honor whenever I get to celebrate there. But during my sermon, I looked out at the people. It was wall-to-wall people. There were people in the aisle standing. It was a lot of people, which is unusual for me during a Lenten season. You know, Lenten is usually people, there's no more dramatics in the church because the curtain is closed and all, but I don't know. Something was going on. People were there. And I had an opportunity to preach a sermon in which I specifically called for us to be speaking out about Ukraine, especially because we have gone through genocide, especially because we have gone through a war where nobody really cared. I mean, at least NATO is now reacting to what's going on in the Ukraine. But in the case of Armenians, we were just out there. Right? A couple of years ago? Last year? Yeah. In fact, right now, turning off the gas in Artsakh, if you haven't followed, that's what the Azeri's new plan is to basically to make it really rough. As if it wasn't rough already. I don't know, my friends. It is a sense of depression that I get when I read these kind of headlines, because here we are again commemorating something instead of trying to stop something that certainly needs to be stopped. Saturday, today's Thursday. I'm just jumping ahead of the game. I don't know why I'm going so fast. It's life is going by so fast. I was just telling my wife the other day, I can't believe it's 2022 already. We remember like we were going to turn the millennium, right? We were looking forward to the year 2000, and here we are in 22 years later. And so Saturday, we are going to be going and standing in solidarity with the Ukrainian Catholic Church here in the Los Angeles area. Our good friend at the Western Diocese, Didon Avagian, has made arrangements for us to go. I'm going to be sharing a prayer. In issues, we'll be making a donation, and hopefully we will be, the donation and is a very, 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 very minute part of it. The big part is that at least we're going to be standing there, standing in solidarity with a community. And I just wish that this can be, I don't know what to say. I wish that this can be the direction that Armenian communities take, not only in Ukraine, but throughout the world. We have known suffering and pain like no one else. We have known it, Armenian people. The first genocide, first time that it was recognized as genocide, right? We are the people upon whom that genocide took place. And now, you know, tragically, there are no survivors of the genocide. We have a few documentaries, very, very few, compared to the Holocaust. And the Holocaust, of course, was about 20 years afterwards, which brings new technologies. And fortunately, especially the Shoah Foundation here at USC down in Southern California, I've had a chance to see what they've done. Fortunately, they got recording equipment and they have made, they have preserved the stories of the Holocaust survivors. But in the case of the Armenians, we were fortunate that back in the 60s, 70s really, 70s and 80s, J. Michael Hagopian did a lot of work in documenting survivors. I know the Millers did documenting. There's tapes that exist, their voices, and of course a few publications. And I'll be happy to put some notes on today's show notes so you can follow up on this too. But in reality, today what we have is only secondhand witnesses to the genocide, in that people like me who heard it from my grandparents and I could convey it. secondhand in the sense that it's come to me, they shared it with me, and now I have an obligation to share it. And in that obligation, the only thing that I see for myself is the only meaning that that has, those stories have, is not to say, oh, bad on Turkey. Of course bad on Turkey. Horrible. It's beyond words. Genocide. But really, for me, what is the only thing that I can do is to take that event that took place, the horror of that event, and apply it to life today, namely the horror that is taking place in the Ukraine and the horror that is taking place everywhere else in the world. I, as an Armenian Christian, have that obligation to the world. And so that's where we started, you know, many years ago, the In His Shoes movement. It's about that. It's about feeling empathy, not just getting out there on Times Square. You know, if people don't go to Times Square, it's not going to change anything in history. The Turks still did what they did. Biden got me talking about Biden. Biden last year recognized the genocide and... Oh, yeah, we've been waiting for that. And what happened? Anything change? Biden recognized the genocide. Am I doing some Monday morning quarterbacking? No, I'm not. Go and check out all of the material that I've put there. It's all on the internet. Go and check out the video that I made over 20 years ago. I'm saying these things don't matter. It doesn't matter that he accepted it. It doesn't. And there you go. Here it is. 1 year later, what changed? What changed? You're still in Times Square. You're still looking at a genocide over 100 years old. Instead of talking about what's going on right now. Right now, a small little community, the Ukraine. Ukrainians and Russians picking on them. I know, I say Russians. We got to really focus in our words, right? It is Putin that is picking on them. And we're seeing this unfold on the world stage. And for the last 4 weeks, I've been sharing with you the anguish that I'm going through as a priest, feeling that my hands are tied. What am I supposed to do? And here we are right now, where we have an opportunity as a community to have a voice, and we're going backwards, and that's the conflict, okay? One of the problems of depression, or the reasons why we are depressed, it's the conflicts that we have, and definitely this is a conflict that I have. And so, yeah, I hope you understand that when I look at these kind of headlines, I do get depressed. But let's change that depression, because that's also something that I believe in and preach, and it is very important that we can change those depressions. Not everything is concrete in stone. We do have the ability, and in fact, God gives us that ability to rise from those challenges, rise from that depression, and change it into something that can be worked with. So let me go in that direction, because we had a fantastic conference over the weekend. And of course, I am talking about Reclaim. Yes, Reclaim. We started this like back in 2017. I never really thought it would go beyond a couple of years. I during a couple of the years, I said, wow, can this be sustained? But every year people wanted it. And I've got to thank the Archbishop who's been behind it, who's been saying that, you know, go for another year. So we have been doing this now for 6 years. The first Reclaim conference. It's kind of an interesting idea. And you know what? I'm going to put a link on today's show notes to at least the introduction to it. And you'll be able to hear a presentation by Haig Madoyan about the sacrament of marriage. And if you want, actually, it's on Facebook. Three of the speeches are there, including my opening remarks. But Reclaim is an interesting idea, because I want you to think about that word itself. Okay, you claim something. What does reclaim mean? Right? So you take your laundry in to be cleaned, and they give you a claim check, right? You leave your coat at the stand, and they give you a claim check. You go and sell something and at a pawnbroker, and they give you a claim stub. In other words, that's your claim to that item. You go to the beach, and you put your clothes into a locker. They give you a claim number, right? So that when you go, you claim it. You claim your clothes. You claim your wash. You claim the article that you sold. Now, what does reclaim mean? What is that concept of reclaiming it? Something that is yours, all you need to do is claim it. But reclaim is kind of an interesting concept, because we came up with this idea because so often it's like we've lost it or we've forgotten about something. Okay, so you've taken some laundry to the laundromat, to the cleaners, and they've given you a claim check. And then you've forgotten about it. And then a couple of years later, maybe they don't hold it that long. Let's say a few weeks later, you say, by the way, where's that suit? And, oh yeah, I left it at the cleaners. And I have a claim check. Now, it's not a question of going and reclaiming it, right? You've never claimed it. But the reclaim has to do with something you may have forgotten. And in the case of faith, that makes sense, right? In fact, I use the story that comes to us from the Gospel of Luke. Luke chapter 2. It's an interesting story. It's the only time that Jesus is remembered in his childhood. And Luke is the only evangelist that remembers this. The other two evangelists, or synoptic traditions, namely Matthew and Mark. Matthew starts from the infancy and then jumps over to the baptism at age 30. Mark starts right at the baptism, as does John, actually starts before time. John starts in the beginning, before there was even time, before there was anything, was the word. And then he jumps right over to the baptism of Jesus. But Luke takes a moment to talk about the childhood of Jesus in this way. He reveals a story. Jesus is 12 years old, and Mary and Joseph and Jesus were in Jerusalem for some event. And now they were going to head back to Nazareth, and they start going back. And about a day's worth of the journey back, Joseph and Mary look for Jesus and they can't find him. Where is he? And, you know, I made the point the other day, because if we look at it in terms of today, oh, quickly, call Child Protective Services, because, like, what do you mean you've forgotten your child? What do you mean you don't know where your child is? But you know what? In those times, it was a little bit different. And this is why it's important to always understand the times, to the best that you can. And the very simple reading of it is, you know, that people in those days, they traveled in caravans. And it was not unusual that the older folks or the parents would be in one set of caravans, a group of people going together. The children would be playing elsewhere. And so it would not be uncommon. In fact, there would be nothing dangerous that Jesus was probably playing with other children in that group. Or at least that was the assumption that Mary and Joseph had. Where is Jesus? Well, he's out with his friends. It's no different than what my mom and dad did. We would get home from school like at 3 o'clock. And we'd get on our bicycles and we'd ride over to our friend's house and we'd play. Our friends would come over to our house and we'd play until the sun went down or something like that. I remember we'd be on the streets playing. It was safe. You didn't think about it. There was nothing to worry about. And I guess there was, maybe there was, but at that time we didn't. At least my parents, and I know several other parents, who it was just regular it was a regular thing that you would do. I have vivid memories of being like at least a mile and a half away from my house, because we'd get on our bikes and we'd ride around and we'd go see friends, and we'd, you know, friends that we knew from school. And then when it was evening time, we'd head home and we'd sit down and we'd have dinner and the sun would go down and then we'd go to sleep, you know. This was like a routine. And so parents weren't looking for us. And that's what happened in this story. Luke chapter 2, Mary and Joseph, they're not looking for Jesus. All of a sudden they realize, wait, where is he? They had gone a day's journey, says the evangelist. So, okay, so he was probably hanging out with his friends, but they looked around and couldn't find him. And they went all the way back to Jerusalem. And there they saw Jesus in the temple, talking and discussing with the elders of the temple. And Jesus looks at him and says, why are you surprised? Didn't you know I'd be in my father's house? What? Hold it. Wait, Joseph. No, in my father's house. He was in his father's house. He was in the temple talking with the elders. A beautiful little story, which I used to emphasize the idea of reclaiming. Joseph and Mary had not really lost Jesus. He was always there, but he was out of their field of vision. They had to go back. And that go back is the reclaim. Okay? You can go and claim your Jesus, but to go back, to make that effort to go back there and claim him, that's the reclaim. And that's what we tried to do through Reclaim when we started in 2017. It said, let's go backwards and let's look at what we may have lost or maybe misplaced and placed someplace. And now we find that we need that. We need to bring that to us. And so when we started in 2017, we talked about reclaiming faith. We 2018, we talked about reclaiming the creative energy. And so we brought together people who were in their fields, on the top of their fields, and talking about reclaiming that creativity that is given to us by the Holy Spirit. I mean, when you think about it, do I create everything because I've got a pad or a computer in my hand, or do I create that because it's me creating that and using that pad or that computer as a tool for my creativity? 2019, we talked about reclaiming Gomidas as a Vartabed. He's not a Gom. Get over here, Gomi. We're gonna play some cards tonight. No, he was a Vartabed. He was a teacher of the church. And so reclaiming him as a person, a priest of the church. 2020, we talked about Ichmiadzin. It was a fantastic conference that we had put together and unfortunately had to cancel it at the last minute because COVID came out right a week before we were told that, you know, we couldn't get together, we couldn't assemble, and had to cancel it. 2021, we did our first post-pandemic, talking about faith in a post-pandemic society, and we did that all on Zoom, and this was our first time getting back together, reclaim the Armenian Christian family. That's what I'm going to share with you right after the break. Let's take a break right now. Let's process what we've got. And here is the selection, the song that I picked for today. Enjoy.
Oh, John. gustelere, kamahats kešeksere, kapem ču gustelere, kamahats kešeksere, kapem ču gustelere, alvenim, alvenim, došite barah, alvenim, 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 došite barah, alvenim, tušate pačem zorgi šeri, skosirac jarone, tušate pačem zorgi šeri, skosirac jarone, tiki 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 dore dam da gadi tiki 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 dom tiki 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 dore dam da gadi tiki 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 dom di 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 alghanim balghanim doshit bara khalghanim alghanim balghanim doshit bara khalghanim tushat pacham zorgi shei skosira tsiyarone tushat pacham zorgi shei skosira tsiyarone yesko janik yarone yesko sira tsiyarone yarone mi yar yarone mi yarone mi yar yarone.
I like that diggy 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 part, right? Huh? Isn't that nice? Yeah, diggy diggy. That is called Armenian Sketches, of course, Inga and Anush, off of their Menkenkai Sarera. This is off of an album several years ago. I don't know how long ago it was, but I will have a link on today's show notes, as I always do. It's important that we always support the artists that bring so much enjoyment to our lives. Picked out this song because I think we needed to hear something like this right now. It's too much depression all around us, too much negativity, and that Armenian Sketches is about the goodness. It's about creativity. It's about that diggy, diggy, diggy. It's about, like, taking charge of even sounds, using those sounds to uplift our spirit. And they certainly do mine. I hope they did yours. Check out the show notes. There'll be a link. Anush and Inga. Well, we are back, and we were talking about Reclaim, this conference that we began in 2017, and we just had the sixth incarnation of Reclaim. It was called Reclaiming the Armenian Christian Family, a concept that was given to us by Archbishop Hovnan when he proclaimed this year as the Year of the Family. And I've got to tell you that when I first embarked on this, I was thinking that this could go in many, many different directions. I mean, family today is defined in such a broad way that the what we used to talk about, the nuclear family, basically father, mother, and children, sons and daughters, has now been expanded into what we now look at and call the modern family. The modern family includes stepchildren, step-parents. It includes wives and husbands of same gender. And these are realities that are taking place. There are mixed marriages in the classic sense as well as in the modern sense. Classic sense, it used to be because of race, would be called a mixed marriage. In today's terms, the mixed marriages might be along gender lines and certainly around ethnic lines as well. It just depends in which community you are and by which traditions and standards you're talking about to say this is mixed, this is traditional, this is new. But we all agree upon one thing at least: the family, what we call family today in 2022, is quite different from what we called family, let's say, in 1980, 40 years ago, quite different from what we called family in the 1960s and 1950s. And I won't go even beyond that because our memory of that is basically confined to books. Yes, there are people that were around, but let's stick to just the last 70, 80 years, how much family has changed. And this is a reality. It's not a good or bad thing. You know, you can't say that, oh, it's changed for the better, it's changed for the worse, because those are subjective terms that you can ascribe depending on where you come from. I know that for me, as being a child of the 60s and 70s, when I look at a lot of things, I think that was the greatest period of life that anybody could have lived in. I mean, the challenges that we had, it shaped who I am. But I know as I talk to more and more people, the times that people live in are the times that are important to them. Yes, I know we have people who say, I wish I was born back then. Yeah, that's nice. But for the most part, people think that their lives, their times are the important times. And rightly so, because it's a matter of perspective where you're at. You know, growing up, the event in my life that was unmistakably a defining moment, in that every one of us in my generation remember where we were when President Kennedy was shot. And I thought to myself, wow, that is so defining that is a moment in history. And now when I look at it, oh, there's people who don't even know who President Kennedy was. Or they know him as a person in a history book, not realizing that this was somebody who really, really had an opportunity to shape and change the world, and his life was cut short. And we were witnesses to that, as were we witnesses to Dr. King, Bobby Kennedy, and other assassinations that we saw. And each generation goes through this. Certainly the generation that was born in the 80s definitely remembers where we were on 9/11 when the Twin Towers came down. I do too. But defining moments in your life. And today, when we look at families, it's a different game. It's a different set of circumstances. As a priest, I know that just in the last 5 or 6 years, well, when was it? 2015, the Supreme Court in the United States approved of same-sex marriages. And it was shortly thereafter that, as you know, the church officiates at wedding services. So you get at least the way it works here in California, the state issues a license, which is good until somebody signs it. So the church has the authority, or the clergyman has the authority to sign it and validate a marriage. So I remember 2015 when I saw for the first time. It was very unusual for me. All my life I had signed marriage certificates that had the name of a groom up at top, a male, and the name of a bride on the second line. And this is what, I mean, this is, it's not, again, not a judgment statement. This is what was the way we would get the license. And then after 2015, now we have licenses where you have check marks. So the top box can be a bride or a groom, can be a man or a woman. The second box is a check mark. Is it a bride or a groom? And so you have the four possibilities there, right? Of filling out a bride and a groom and a bride and a bride, or a groom and a groom. And you look at that, and, you know, for me, who had been doing weddings since the early 80s, this was, let's see, about 35 years into my ministry when I first saw one of these licenses. And now we've gotten used to it. Now we get these licenses and we have to fill out the forms. And, you know, every so often we'll get somebody who will ask, you know, can you do a wedding of same sex? And I make a very important point that I think a lot of times we forget. I can't because in our church, marriage is defined through the union of a man and a woman. And that's a definition of marriage that our church has. Now, what the rest of society, what people want to accept as marriage, that's fine. It's not a judgment statement. I'm not standing here as judge. I'm here to tell you that through our church, this is what we can offer. We can offer the marriage of a man and a woman, because that's the definition that we understand of marriage. And yes, Do I understand that there are women living together and they call it marriage? Yes, I understand that. There are men living together. They call it marriage. Yes, I understand that. Is that a marriage ceremony that the church can officiate at, that can do? No, we can't. At this point, no, it's not part of our service that we offer to people. It's just plain and simple. It's a matter of definition, not a matter of judgment. There are Christian communities, right, and that will do that offer marriage between same-sex couples. They are part of what would be broadly considered the Protestant family of Christian churches. Not in the mainline traditional, on the West, the Roman Catholic, or on the East, the Orthodox. No, it's still between a man and a woman. And sometimes what happens is, because we reject these, it becomes a matter of judgment. Many, many years ago, when I was first a priest, one of our dear, dear families, very, very close to me in our Armenian church, their daughter married a Jewish man. And it broke my heart that I had to say, I'm sorry, I cannot officiate at that. And I made the point at that time, and I think this has come with me until now, that this is not a judgment statement. It's not a judgment statement. I can't say that, you know, because he's Jewish, I'm not doing it. No, it's a matter of definition. In our church, marriage, holy matrimony, is union in Christ. If the person doesn't believe Jesus is the Christ, then it doesn't mean anything. There's no substance to that marriage ceremony to say that you are being united in Christ, and by the way, you don't believe in Christ. No. So it's not a question of judgment. It's just that this is how the marriage is done. And I know that I'm spending quite a bit of time on this because I know that this becomes a point of contention, that people start pointing fingers, and it shouldn't be that way. We should understand that everybody, every society, every group has their own set of rules and regulations, and so it is in the church. And you can choose to belong to that, or you could choose to reject it. That's one of the beauties of having free will, right? But what we offered at the Reclaim was to talk about, well, what does it mean when we are married? What does the sacrament mean? What is the sacrament of marriage? And to that end, we had a wonderful speaker, Haig Madoyan, who talked about the sacrament itself. This was basically from the playbook, just so we can have a foundation talking about what is marriage in the Armenian church. Following him, we had a wonderful speaker. She was a therapist, or she is a therapist practicing in this area, talked about how to keep families healthy in an unhealthy world. And to this end, she spoke about communication skills. And it was really eye-opening to a lot of people who were there. Like, what does it mean to react to somebody, to answer somebody in different ways? There is aggressive, there is passive, there is passive-aggressive, there is, of course, the preferable method, right? Which I remembered from back in my psychology days, back in the 70s in school. Not aggressive, not passive, but assertive, assertiveness. And here's what was interesting about this. She was not from the Armenian culture. So in demonstrating what an assertive response might be to a particular question, some of our people challenged her and said, wait, you know, there is a cultural difference too in culture where it's okay to not be so straightforward, that maybe to preface a request, preface your statement that you see something wrong, but to preface it by saying, I understand, or it's okay that you did this. Some people may call that sugarcoating. Others may look at it and say it is a matter of civility. And this is what I loved about the conference. I've got to tell you, honestly, I've been missing this kind of conference and this kind of communication, where instead of pigeonholing people, which we do so often now in this world that we have created, that you are either you're either from the left or you're from the right. You're either Democratic or you're Republican. So if you are a Republican, it's impossible for you to have some kind of ideas that might be progressive. If you are a Democrat, it might be impossible for you to adhere to some conservative value. Instead of saying that I am a human being that maybe tend to sway towards one party or the other, but I also have this ability to understand my life, myself, and define myself by my actions, by my wants. And I don't want to be pigeonholed. I don't want to be colored one color or another. And I'm talking, of course, about American politics where things are blue and red. And by the way, I just recently read Michelle Obama's book. Highly recommend it. She talks about this in a broad sense. It's called Becoming, Michelle Obama. Definitely recommend it. But it gave me so much to ponder and think about of how much we have changed. I'll put a link on today's show notes. You can check out that book as well. So getting back to our thing, we were talking about the family and we were talking about ways of communication. And so much of it has to do with our culture as well. Our third speaker was Ani Shahinyan. Wow. Wow. What can I say? In fact, I'm signing up Ani. She's going to be doing a little session of videos about apologetics, Christian apologetics. You know what that means? Not to apologize. But yeah, it is to apologize, but it is more to explain. It's just a small little way of explaining Christian ideas. And she was wonderful. She spoke about the family, about family being luxury, talking about what family means and our understanding. And the final speaker was Judge Sharon Kalemkerian. Again, you know, I've shared with you, my listeners, how these things evolve and take place. I was in a very special place in January when the St. Sarkis Church in San Diego was consecrated. And there came this woman who introduced herself to me. She says, I am Judge Sharon Kalemkerian, and I do family law. And I said, whoa, I am running a conference about family. Would you be a speaker? And she accepted so graciously. And we were so lucky to have her to talk about some of the laws. Because a lot of times when we talk about family, as I said earlier, the definitions have changed. So that a child can also be a stepchild, a parent can also be a stepmother, stepfather, and of course it broadens and broadens and broadens. Now in Armenian, you know, in the language, we have unique names for these relationships. So there is a difference between uncles, for instance. There is a Horiakbayr, which is the father's brother, and there is a Moriakbayr, or more commonly called a Keri. A Keri is not a father's brother, it is a mother's brother. And everyone knows that. We know that Keri is a mother's brother. And the same is true with sisters. You know, we have Morakuir and we have Horakuir. We have relationships that go beyond that. For instance, two sisters, the husbands, each sister has a husband. Those husbands are Kenegals. We have Kenny, we have Dakar, we have all kinds of stuff, okay? But what am I saying is that the culture demanded that because our culture was a little bit different than what we have today. And each culture evolves. This is that part that I've emphasized so often. We cannot be scared of evolution. We are here because of evolution. We are not those simple people that existed, you know, 10,000 years ago, 1,000 years ago, 100 years ago. I mean, when we talk about women's rights, a lot of times it's just interesting to me that did you know here in America, the United States of America, one of the what's considered one of the most progressive countries, one of the most forward-thinking, forward-moving countries, that 100 years ago, women were just given the right to vote only 100 years ago. Only 100 years ago. Before that, they weren't allowed to have a voice in the selection process. Yeah, it's true. what was the amendment? I want to say 19th Amendment, but it was like in 1920 that it was ratified. Okay, 102 years ago. I know, yeah, to us that's a long time, but it's really not in the entire course of that history. And so, too, with a lot of things in our lives, we have to take into account the culture that we have. And that's why it was really beautiful at the Reclaim. What happened in the afternoon was we had these discussions, panel discussions. And the panel discussions were kind of interesting to me because I thought they would go in a completely different way. But I also realized that as an organizer, I needed to take a little bit more caution in how I set that up. In other words, I forgot that there is a lot of pressure on people to say what they expect we want to hear. And this especially in a church environment. So I will say this, it was really nice because it was candid, it was good conversation. What was probably flawed, it was probably not for study, and it was probably something that I at least learned so that in the future I won't be pulling that again. In other words, if I've asked you to speak, I've got to also account for that you may be intimidated to speak about those issues among an audience in front of people, in front of strangers, as well as in front of people that you know. This is not to say that people were not candid and people could have given us the best answers possible. I'm just telling you one of the frustrations that I had as an organizer of the event. Nothing next to the big frustration, which was the numbers. Certainly, right after the event was over, we heard I'm not quarterbacking, Monday morning quarterbacking, but I predicted it. It's on the internet. Go and look at the commercials I'm in. I said that every time we do a Reclaim, we have people who come up and say, oh, I wish I had known about it. Please let me know about the future. And what happened the day after, right on the post on Facebook, somebody says, oh, I wish I had known about this. I mean, it's really sad because these opportunities are all around us, but somehow we don't tune into them. We don't pick up on them. We think that it's a church, so we're expecting church to be that organization on Sunday. And if you know me, you know we don't wind up God only on Sundays. So I'm always cognizant of the fact that all around me, people have pigeonholed me as a priest, and therefore we're in this box. I just had this conversation with a lady who wanted to invite me to be a speaker at domestic violence conversation. Yeah, they're just waking up that there's domestic violence in the community. And she said, well, I know you've been working with women and you've been doing stuff. And I said, you know, I'd be happy to be part of the commission and be happy to talk. But the reason why I won't is because I always get pigeonholed. They'll say, oh, he's a priest. And so they have to balance it. If he's an Orthodox, let's bring in a Protestant. If he's a Protestant, let's bring in a Catholic. If he's from Etchmiadzin, let's bring someone from Antillas. And I won't cheapen my work by doing something like that. You want to see copycats, take a look at the internet. I should be flattered because what do they say? Imitation is the best means or source of flattery, that they're imitating you. But on the other hand, let's go back to where we started. It is depressing because it shows that people are not counting on their own creative energies, their creative juices. I remember seeing this video made by a priest from the prelacy. It was so funny because it was exactly they had taken the same movements, the same speech patterns, inflection and everything, and they were passing this off. Okay, thank you. I'm very flattered that you're trying to copy me. But on the other hand, isn't it sad that we're just duplicating the efforts? Instead of saying, okay, now let me create something, we're saying, let me do the same as you so that I could market it to my audience. And that to me is, yeah, goes back to the depression we were talking. But we will end it on a good note. Reclaim came and went, and it was very, very successful. I'm going to put a link on today's show notes. I invite you to read through it, to look at some of the videos that are there, look at the pictures, the expressions. To me, the most exciting part about it was the age group. We actually hit our target market. It was mostly made up of people 20 to 35 years old. That was our target market all along. And this year, I think we accomplished that. So to me, as an organizer, in that respect, I was very, very pleased with it. And of course, the content of it was beyond belief. We just had such incredible teachers, speakers, people who were able to convey their ideas to a public, and the public was very receptive to it. Reclaim 2023 is set for March 11th, 2023, okay? Mark that on your calendar. Yes, we always do it on that Saturday before the third Sunday of Lent, which is called the Sunday of the Steward. All right, here's the piano player. Got to move around. Here's Susie. I'll be back in just a couple moments to give some parting comments.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement. And thank you to our listeners for all your prayers, your support, for just turning us on. But more importantly, thank you for sharing us. I don't know what happened this week. Like I said, in Sunday, it was packed in church in the middle of Lent. But this Sunday, I know we got a lot of new listeners, too. So thank you very much for sharing the broadcast and sharing it with people. We are getting ready for the Easter season. I'm going to be at the Rancho Mirage Church during Easter week, and that is a beautiful place. Now, I just found out that there's going to be the Coachella Festival that week, so it means that prices are very high. But if you've got an RV and you want to come out there, I mean, prices are going to be high for lodging, but if you want to get out there, I highly recommend it. If nothing else, come out for Easter service. That's going to be April 17th. I spoke a little bit about April 24th, about getting away from the usual grind. We're going to be doing something very important on April 24th here at our diocese. We're going to be baptizing adults. These are people who have not been baptized, primarily because of the Soviet atheism that was so prevalent in the Soviet regime, and a lot of people, because they weren't able to get baptized, are now approaching end of life, and this is an opportunity. This takes place April 24th at the cathedral, and it is going to be something very, very moving and touching. If you know people who are in that category, let us know. This is an opportunity for them to get baptized. Very, very important, and especially at this part in their lives. Just, you know, drop me an email. Do the usual things that you do to me. Let me know, and we will get them squared away. Okay, that brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. Please take a look at our show notes. There's going to be all kinds of stuff in there that you can spend some time going in and out of the internet, getting into that rabbit hole. Sometimes you start one video, it ends up to other, and then at the end of it, I hope you get back to the next step. And so on behalf of our producer, Susie, and myself, Father Vazgen, look forward to seeing you again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
I forgot to ask you if you're seeing the same sky as we are. Bye.